Carried on indeed. That is the theme of this morning's program, as it often is. Well, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I am your regular host, Paul Rowland, and I have my regular co-host, Jacqueline Keeler. Good morning, Jacqueline.
Hello, good morning.
And we have on the phone Shelley Sansosi, she can tell us if that's pronounced right, who's the director of the Tribal Environmental Employment Rights Office on the Yankton Sioux Reservation in South Dakota, which is suffering ongoing serious problems from flooding from a bomb cyclone which hit in March of this year and continued weather events. And we're going to be talking about that with her and Jackie, who just visited South Dakota just a few days ago.
Last week. Yeah.
And people know about these massive events like Katrina and New Orleans after Katrina, Houston after Harvey, Puerto Rico after Maria. Obviously there's somewhat of a lesser scale, but seemingly minor but massive regional events like these bomb cyclones are also happening on an increasing scale, and people are just not equipped to deal with them. And compounded, just like those other cases, government ineptitude and inaction has compounded this what's happening with the Yankton Sioux. So you want to talk a little bit about your experience here before?
Yeah, I should say that this is Jacqueline Keeler, and I myself am, my father is a member of the Yankton Sioux tribe, and the community that he grew up in, Lake Andes, South Dakota, on the reservation, is deeply impacted. Basically, the main road into town has been flooded since March. The governor spent $1 million rebuilding the road and raised it about 4 feet, but then on September 12th, I think, they got 11 inches of rain in 24 hours, and it flooded out that road, and reflooded the community. And so the community has been underwater since March. That's 6 months, and has had very little relief. I was actually there during the bomb cyclone when it hit in March. I was attending a storytelling festival, on our reservation, and I had to drive through it, and it was really scary. And then the next morning it was snowing in March, and then luckily they plowed the roads. I could get back to the airport, but you have to realize that these folks have been living with this since then. I mean, and it's not just South Dakota; it's also Iowa, Nebraska. It's a very large region, and even parts of North Dakota and Minnesota, and so. So it's a lot of these places are still underwater. I mean, there are interstates that are still closed.
So I guess one you could say that it has garnered less attention and does seem like a lesser event because it's such a sparsely populated rural area.
Well, relatively. Yeah, I think Charles Mix County, which is the county the reservation is located in, it has about a little over 9,000 residents. And then Lake Andes, my dad's hometown, has a little over 900. And about half of them are members of the tribe, and Shelley is the TARO officer, the Tribal Employment Rights Officer Office Director there for the tribe, which is her office is located in the White Swan housing. And the White Swan housing is housing is located next to Lake Andes. It was an easy walk to downtown Lake Andes. And since then, that road has been washed out. And when they rebuilt the new raised road, Highway 18 going into Lake Andes, they did not connect the road, one of the roads, the main road that we used to use to get to there, with the, so it was at a lower level by 4 feet. And so it was, and so now the young people, they're walking on the highway. There's a dirt road that they have to take now, and it's really steep, and they're quite concerned. It's very rutted, and they're very concerned about what it will be like in the winter. And so the kids are walking to school sometimes. You know, what used to be just a half mile walk is now much longer, and they're walking on unsafe roads. And so, and we don't know what it's going to be like when it's freezing. There's still a lot of standing water, and that water has tested positive for E. coli. And children are getting ill. And I think Oliva Tashelli described some of the conditions that she's been kind of working as the point person there at the community center, helping to distribute you know, resources and food. Even they're eating communally because they can't eat in their homes because their homes smell like sewage.
So let's bring Shelley up. Hello, Shelley.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, Shelley.
I kind of got an echo here, but I hope you can hear me clearly. Here, what I wanted to add, what Jacqueline was saying is, here down in the White Swan community, I am the vice chair of the community, kind of like the leader of the community. The chairman of our community, he's kind of like the kind of like keeps our building up to date if anything goes wrong with it. But his name is Rob Gray. And so we're kind of heading this whole thing, trying to get some disaster relief for the White Swan community. As Jacqueline said before, our housing has been underwater for about 6 months now. And some of the effects of the water and a lot of runoff, because a lot of tributaries and other lakes north of us have broken and come down into the lake. And so there is E. coli in the water, in the stagnant water. And at times we see dead fish floating, and we see like a couple of dead dogs in there. And just recently I was telling Jacqueline that a couple of families just decided to move on their own because their kids are getting like ringworms or pink eye or impetigo. And now from the mold that's been constant, we've been trying to keep up. Our IHS has provided bleach and the proper way to get rid of the mold or mildew, but because of the constant groundwater and the sump pumps, the mold just keeps growing, and it's affecting the kids' breathing. So just recently, I was telling Jacqueline a few days ago that about three to four families just decided to move to their other families' homes in different communities just to get away from the mold because their kids are being affected by it. You know, that just it's one thing after another, strep, or now they're on like inhalers, and they're on neb treatments. So we're just kind of trying our best to keep our kids safe through telling them about, you know, staying out of the water. But you know how the kids are, and this is where they live, this is their home. And a lot of the diseases or the bugs or viruses are in the ground water that come up every time it rains. And unfortunately, we're expected for our first snowstorm tomorrow. It's supposed to come in tomorrow, so we're all kind of getting worried about that because there's a lot of groundwater. If it freezes, we're worried about the pipes, kind of things like that. Another thing, another big worry for a lot of the community members that have been coming to me is their furnace, to turn on the furnace. A lot of the people that work for our housing authority come and check the furnace. Some of it has like the mold spores in the ventilation, so they're hesitant about turning on their furnaces. But we're gonna be down in freezing temps tonight. The western part of South Dakota right now is getting snow now, and it's just coming east. So they're getting worried about that. And throughout this whole time, when the people had their basements filled with water, they had a lot of their belongings that were damaged. and that were removed during the first part of the cleanup. And summer came, but we still had water in our basements. A lot of the people chose to put their belongings in bins outside of their homes, but you know, there's no garages by their home, so they decided after their basement dried up a little bit, they put their belongings back in their basement, and then we got more rains and more flooding, and so a lot of people lost more things in their homes, and so we're just trying to go from there. The most immediate need that I felt that what needed to happen was one of our elders, she's not my grandma, but I call her grandma. And in our community, we all call her Grandma Teresa. And her home is one of the worst homes that was affected by all the groundwater causing the sewage back up into her home. And she just couldn't eat. She just couldn't eat there at her house with the way it smelled. So we reached out to the Salvation Army, because not only our community that was flooded, other communities were flooded. So I got a hold of the Salvation Army and asked them, hey, well, can you come down here, or what can you provide? We're flood victims too. So they provided like flood kits, like from what the Red Cross gives out, and then they provided like sack lunches there for about a week. And from there, our community and our tribe, we all came together and we decided that we're going to try to keep feeding the people at our community center as long as we can, because some of the kids that are where we lived in a very impoverished county, and it's hard to get jobs. So some of the families here, the electricity bill is outrageous, especially if you have 10 sump pumps going off in your basement. So the electricity bills are really high, and so not all the time does you know, they have enough for necessities or for food. So we're offering like hot meals for the kids. They've really been enjoying it now. It's going on a month now, and so we just been, and some of the local church groups we've been reaching out to, they've been reaching out to us, and they've been doing, I just felt good the other day. One of the quilting groups in one of the surrounding towns, the ladies there are elderly, and they're making blankets for us. And so I felt really good for that, because that's a big need here in our community. Like I said, a lot of our community members lost a lot of their belongings, clothes, shoes, you know, mostly like, you know, their blankets and their towels, because it soaked up in the water. And at that time, they told us to throw everything out because of the water could have been contaminated. And at this point, a lot of the different tribes have reached out to us by giving pellets of water, because we were unsure about the drinking water, or because some, even though that they test the water all the time, we were still, some of the water still kind of smells, even though it's crystal clear and it comes back, you know, okay, but the water smells, and we don't know what that's from. So we just been handing out the cases of drinking water and taking precautions. I do know one of the ladies that came to eat yesterday, she had told us that she has E. coli herself, and that's within our native housing community. So that really concerned me, you know, yesterday learning that. And so at where we feed at the community center, we really make sure that we take all the serve safe health precautions and serving meals to people, like wearing gloves and sanitizing, washing everything down, and, you know, separating the food, don't having anything left over, kind of a thing. Every time some of the community members come over, we have them sign in so that we can keep track of a list of people, how much we feed, and so we can kind of plan out our meals and how much food that we will have. I've been really appreciative towards our tribe for their support and assisting me to allow us to keep on with feeding the people here. That's one of the biggest needs that I could see, because like I said, all of their monies go to the electricity bill.
Yeah, how much How much are those electricity bills? They're paying for some pumps. Their homes are been flooded underwater for 6 months. How much are some of those bills right now?
$300 to $700.
Yeah,
anywhere from $300 to $700.
Yeah, and that's quite a bit for these families.
Yeah. And it really depends, because we have two different electric companies we go through. So it just depends if it's Charles Mix Rural Electric or Northwestern, you know. So it, some of our homes run on the Northwestern side and some of them run on the Charles Mix side. So it just depends on their fees. But like I said, the people have been having a really tough time for the last 6 months, and this past 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks is really the only time that somebody has reached out to them, mm-hmm. you know, and like trying to help or trying to step up in the community. And one lady had asked me that before. She told me, well, you knew about this in March, and why are you stepping up now? And this is off the subject, but I told her I was in mourn. And in our cultural ways, in our mourning, we have to stay home and we can't be out in the public and display loudness or be talking in public places. We stay at home. And I told her I finished my mourning, and so now I could be out in gatherings with the people. And so I said, this is the first time. I went to school the other day. My daughter's been in school for over a month now, but I actually had to go and take her to school and to their classrooms. And when I went there, I really felt bad because of the children that I see that come to the community center, that come and eat. I now know what they're saying. Even though they wash their clothes, they still have that mold smell on them. Mm. And
they're teased by the other children.
It made me feel bad. You know, it kind of opened my eyes to want to do more, want to be more, want to speak up for more for these children.
And there are a lot of, most of the residents are children, right? And they're being, and they've been, and like you said, there's been a lot of, the standing water was there over the summer, even when it was really hot, the whole cul-de-sacs were filled with water. They turned into lakes, and the kids were, it was hard to keep the kids from swimming in them. But there hasn't been a lot of help from the state, has there? I mean, the governor refused a request by the tribe a couple weeks ago to send out the National Guard, right?
And that's exactly right. You know, and then South Dakota was declared another a round of natural disaster, but our tribe was not included in that, and neither was the county. And we're right along all the other Missouri River tribes. They were included. Well, two others were included in the disaster for the FEMA help. So I don't know if that's going to change or if that's just fixed, or and we have to go with what we have.
Yeah, I think
Trump.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Well, I just want to say that Trump had two weeks ago as well, Trump had issued a second state of emergency and included over 25 counties in South Dakota and then two tribes, I think Cheyenne River and Rosebud Sioux tribes, but did not include the Yankton Sioux tribe or Charles Mix County. And I should probably describe the area a little better. Lake Andes has a natural prairie lake, mm-hmm. located really, it was probably it's one of the largest lakes I think in the state, right? When my dad was growing up there, you know, he used to fish there every day out in the boat with his dog. But now you can't even do that. I mean, the water has become really polluted with farm runoff and nitrates and phosphates, and there's an algae bloom problem that's been ongoing, and with large fish kills as well. And so that water that's coming from the lake is actually in, is now, the lake is kind of in the housing, isn't it? I mean, the housing has become a new lake bed. And so the, because it's gone over the road and it's entering the housing, and so it's the water is already toxic in many ways. And I heard that you can't even let your dog swim in there because they could die, right? I mean, it's pretty dangerous. And so it's, oh, go ahead.
I wanted to, so just to give our listeners more of a sense. So first of all, this is in southeastern South Dakota. Is there any what's the nearest city where people might recognize it, where this is?
Yankton, South Dakota is like an hour away from us. And then we're like 2 hours away from Sioux Falls. And then Mitchell, South Dakota is like an hour away from us north.
So this
pretty rural.
So it's just astounding to hear this. It's in your experience and experience of the elders of the community, how unusual is this? That's my first question, and then I have another one about what's going on with the water. How is it just because it's so saturated that it just doesn't go away?
The elders are really shocked that the lake has flooded like this, and they haven't seen it flood like this in their lifetime. And then yes, it's because of the ground is so saturated, and just the storms. A lot of people they're kind of blaming like global warming. Some of the people that came down, some of the experts that have talked to our tribal leadership are saying the way that global warming is and the way the weather patterns have been, that it's all due to that. But
it's actually characterized as a 1,000-year flood, but with climate change those definitions may not be meaningful anymore. And yeah, the area it's also, I should say, across from the White Swan housing is the church where I was baptized, St. Philip's Episcopal Church, and in that cemetery, a lot of my relatives are buried there, and it's also threatened with being underwater. And the White Swan community originally was located on the Missouri River, and it was moved in the 1950s. Late 40s, early 50s, to make room for the dam, the Fort Randall Dam that's on the Missouri River. It was part of several dams that were built, and all of it flooded Indian land, and including the one up at Standing Rock where Cannonball, most of the other Native communities were physically moved and rebuilt. White Swan was not completely, but they did move the church and some of the cemetery, and then this housing was built to house a lot of the people who were displaced. And more housing's been added over the years, but a lot of the community was moved to Lake Andes, and so this is the second time this community has been flooded out, and it is largely due to land use policies that have benefited the white community primarily. I mean, I don't think our people ever felt like this intensive farming and all this thing was like how we wanted to use the land. So.
I know there's an aqueduct. Yeah, there's an aqueduct that comes from the lake that drains towards the Missouri River. But I know that the South Dakota Game Fish and Wildlife have not fixed that or opened it completely to let the water flow, because there's a lot of farmland and like second homes, their vacation homes are there that would probably be threatened, you know, if they opened up and released the water. But what we're saying is this is our primary home. You know, these are our homes, and it's really affecting, like I said, the children, you know, with the breathing and the ringworms, you know, stuff like that. the health and welfare of the people. And we were really looking, because we all live here. This is where we live. This is where our homes are. Like you said, our ancestors are buried here. And as well as we went to school with the white farmers, you know, we kind of want to live in harmony. This is our, keep it a place, a safe place. But it's not all the time that's what they're thinking is more of, you know, the value of their land or the real estate. So,
yeah, the Yankton Sioux tribe is, the reservation is checkerboarded, and this is why it's been so difficult to act in a unified manner. The issue is that a lot of the land after allotment, the Dawes Act in the late 19th century, they allotted out the land to tribal members, and whatever was, quote, left over was then opened up for homesteading to white farmers. And so so this is why the reservation is so checkerboarded. And so you have a situation with Lake Andes where the town has historically been white, although that's changing. It's becoming more than half Native now. And then the land where White Swan is and the land all around it has been purchased by the tribe and put into trust. But the dirt road that they're using now, and I think you might want to describe that dirt road, is owned by the township. And so and so where the money is going to come to pave the road before winter, it's, I don't know. And then of course building the berm, they have right now sandbagged. And they're pumping out water onto the community, actually into a field that is now flooding the cemetery of the community.
Yeah.
And so, but they, so when they approached the state and about helping to pay for the berm, the tribe was told no. And so there's all these questions of who is responsible, where is the money put? I mean, you know, the governor put $1 million into building up the road, but I wonder if that wasn't just to not only to bring business to this town of Lake Andes, but also people using it for recreational use to get to the boating and things like that created by the dam, the dammed water. And so it's, yeah, in a sense that I wrote an article about this for Indian Country Today, and I quoted a press release the tribe had put out earlier in September. And they basically said that, you know, that the community is being sacrificed, you know, that we are literally drowning, was the actual quote. And so, and this is from the lack of, you know, nobody seems to want to. I mean, obviously the tribe wants to, but they don't have the resources. And they also don't have jurisdiction in many key places.
Let me just reintroduce you all. This is a Wednesday Talk Radio. This is our second Wednesday program with co-host Jacqueline Keeler, who you just heard. We have on the phone from the Yankton Sioux Reservation, from the White Swan community, Shelley Sansosi. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes.
Okay, good. And she's the director of the Tribal Employment Rights Office there, and one of the leaders of the community that's facing a very, very difficult situation. This just incredible. I mean, it just seems like it's the bomb cyclone, but it just seems like there's been more rain. It just seems like there's just these huge shifts in climate patterns that are affecting, you know, in different ways, different parts of the planet. And that part that has been, as you're talking about, has been so thoroughly changed hydrologically by the dams on the Missouri River, by the agriculture, and of course the native communities tend to always, like poor communities everywhere, get second or third or fourth class treatment, which seems to be the case here. Anyway, this seems to be a really stark, from those of us who aren't having to live through it, who are seeing it more in the abstract, it seems like a really clear example of the relatively unseen effects of climate change because of such a rural community. But now it's really good to get an inside glimpse.
Well, the question is, you know, this is a huge civil engineering project, and that's what I bring up at the end of my article. Is this is going to be more and more common with climate change, with climate disruption, and so the question is, where is all the money going to come from, and which communities get saved and which communities don't? And I think, you know, we have a clear situation here where, you know, my father's people and these are, you know, the White Swan people are the band that my grandmother came from, you know, and it's obvious that, you know, it's chilling, really. I mean, because these children's lives are being put at risk. And also there's one, I was told when I was there that there's one resident, he had just come back from an organ transplant surgery. And he has 7 children. His wife works full time, and they came back to their home, and it was flooded. And on top of that, the refrigerator was filled with mold, and he's living in that, recovering from an organ transplant. And so, it really does put people's lives in danger. And there's no clear path to bring them relief at this point,
especially without federal assistance and seemingly without much state assistance. I just want to, in addition to reminding you that you're listening to Wednesday Talk Radio, coming up later this morning at 9, it's Making Contact. 9:30, it's Got Science. 10 o'clock, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, The Dirt Bag. Don't forget, you can hear all these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. If you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today. You can find out all this information on our website at kboo.fm. And of course, this is a call-in talk show, and the number to call in with your comments and questions, this unique opportunity to hear a voice directly from behind the front lines of climate disruption in South Dakota, call 503-231-8187.
And Shelley, could you describe the road situation there, and how long the community's been cut off, and what are their options for getting out to go to work and to go to school?
Oh, they're since the major highway has been out since March 5th was actually the date that the lake came over the highway. So we have a dirt road, kind of like a back road. And oh my gosh, if you don't lose it's just a lot of ruts because there's hills behind, and a lot of the runoff, they go over the dirt road. So at times when we do get like the time that we got the 11 inches over throughout the night, there was another river that crossed that road. So there was nobody could get in and out of the housing area. And now that the major highway is out, a lot of the farmers and the big trucks use that road, so it is so bad for our vehicles to go on there. There's a lot of ruts, a lot of bumps, you know, a lot of big huge rocks, and you know, I don't know why the county won't fix it up, because that's one of the major roads. You know, the buses come to get the kids, and then if the ambulance is called, you know, emergency services, we have to go through that. And when it rains, that's one of the big concerns. We have a few people that are that do the dialysis, and when we're in for a storm, we have to find them a place into our hotels or closer to our healthcare facility, so that way we make sure that they're able to get the help, the medical treatment they need. Otherwise, there is no way. There is another back road, but that one is like very minimum maintenance, and it's like pure dirt. And everybody knows that if it rains, you don't go on that road. Otherwise, it's almost like quicksand. You'll sink into the dirt. And so that's what kind of road conditions that we have. Don't know why the county is not building up or allowing the tribe. Even the tribe had suggested that they could come in and grade or put some gravel down. And they told them they didn't want them to do any of that. So I'm worried a lot about the kids. And I tell the kids, if you don't have a ride to school, come run to my office. You know, we'll give you a ride to school, because, you know, you don't walk on that road. Don't drive on that road, because there's a lot of big, huge farm trucks that just drive so fast. And at one point, it's such of a steep hill that you cannot see, and it's narrow. You have to literally almost come to a stop so that you go off to the side, so you don't know what the oncoming traffic is. You know, you might run into them. That's how narrow of that hill is. So I tell them, if you guys miss school, come over here. We'll get you a ride, you know. So we've been trying to work things around that. We have a tribal transit program that during different times of the month that elders have to go out of town or have to go uptown, they come and they pick up the people and take them so that they don't have to walk or, you know, drive or... And just like another lady came in here today, she was saying that her tires, she hit a big rock and now her tire is flat. So I told my husband, I said, it would be a good idea if you brought your air compressor here to the Carroll, you know, just in case anybody needed it, you know, because they're forever coming here and asking for help, you know. Our administration, our law enforcement administration, is also located in this flooded housing area, and they're having to deal with, you know, issues like, you know, with their vehicles. And that's not only the bigger issue, but like if there's emergencies that they have to go down this road and, you know, at high speeds, and it's pretty dangerous.
And ambulances as well for medical emergencies.
Yep,
And their students don't have an activity bus, so they have to figure out a way to get home from school. And I heard that a bus driver was bringing some of the kids to the housing, and she got reprimanded and told to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. So we've talked to our tribal transit, and if kids need it to get a ride home, they can call that. Our transit runs until like midnight. Mm-hmm. So then they will give them a ride.
So I want to talk a bit about, you know, the White Swan community. And as you said, I took photos in there online on my Flickr account, and you can see mm-hmm. that the community center there is very close to the flooded area. And is sandbagged right now. And you said it, I know that you guys said it was flooded 4 times. And but it's still the place that the community comes to gather, right? I mean, people are eating meals there three times a day. I heard a lot of folks there saying they didn't want to eat in their houses because their houses smell like sewage. And so and this is all volunteer, isn't it? The community coming together, cooking meals together. What do you think? I mean, not to put a positive spin on what's happening, but are you still there? Shelly?
Yes, I'm here.
So it was a little noisy.
Can you hear me?
We have a little interruption there. But tell me what that's been like, the community becoming more of a community almost, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. We're starting to like become like family again. it feels like, you know, we've been so busy with our lives, and then ever since the flooding, and everybody's got the same problems in their homes, and they're coming over and saying, hey, this is happening. Shelly, can you help me? Can you call? So it's like almost like we're getting family, you know, together, helping one another, reconnecting like who we really are as a people to take care of. And then we have our grandmothers there, or they're elderly women, and they're cooking the bread, making the cookies, you know, coming over, making sure they'll sit outside and they'll watch the kids, because sometimes the kids will sandbag, you know, they will help with sandbagging. But but now that the berm is being built by a contractor, then we stopped the sandbagging. So that just started yesterday.
Yeah, the community did the sandbagging itself. Even the children helped, and the grandmothers.
And the grandmas watched them. Or sometimes the grandmas went and tied the sandbags for the kids. So it was like we're a sense of togetherness, and, you know, like, hey, somebody cares, you know, connected with a lot of kids. And like they're kind of opening up with their little issues that they have, or, you know, that they want. Like, I was telling one of the tribal leaders yesterday, I said, you know, we did an Amazon wish list, I said, and a few of the kids, you know, they really don't get, like, new school clothes or anything. And so one of their wish lists was, this was the jacket they wanted, you know, because it's getting cold.
And I did
something
put,
like that, you know.
I did put that that wish list up on our website. So that's kbo.fm / Wednesday Talk Radio, and you can find out what people need and contribute in that way. And I did put one of the photos that Jacqueline took, and I'll try to put the other ones up on that page as well. And I do believe we have a caller. Go ahead, Red Willow, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Say,
good morning.
I have a couple of things. I'm curious about the federal response to your tribe and to other tribes, having seen what this president is doing about quid pro quo and all that. I'm wondering, is there a political aspect of this that we can identify and perhaps apply pressure about? That's my question.
Go ahead, Shelley.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not too sure about that part. You know, I haven't talked to our tribal leadership, but I will tell you this part of what I do know. At the beginning of the year, our new governor, she's a Republican governor, and Trump even came to South Dakota to support her in her race. And one of the things, one of the policies that she wanted to pass was about protesting the pipelines that were coming through South Dakota. And she was proposing laws that if we rioted, that we were automatically going to be felons. There were going to be harsh laws. So I know that our tribal leadership had stood up for the water, and they had talked against her proposing these laws. And the Charles Mix County that we live in was for the longest a red county, Republican all the way. And we had one of our local people run for representative of our county, and through the native vote, our county had changed blue. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. But
you betcha it did. Yes, ma'am. I'm sure. Excuse me. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I am sure it did with this guy. He is such a crook. So anyway, that's all I wanted to know. I wanted to explore that, see if we can help out that way. And also, could you please let us know on a regular about in this discussion about how to help monetarily, either email or PayPal, or how that works? Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Red Willow. Yeah, that's a, I think that's a, what's happening in Charles Mix County, you know, has been going on for a while. They had a voting rights lawsuit back in about 10 years ago, and the county had to agree to some oversight to make sure that the native vote in the county was represented fairly. And in fact, one of the grandmothers I interviewed, Sharon Drapo, whose home is also impacted, she became a county commissioner. And so so the native representation there, it's very similar to what's happening in San Juan County in near the Navajo Nation with the Bears Ears thing, where the native community is fighting for representation at the county level, and have been gerrymandered in such a way for so long they haven't been able to have that, but that's changing. Oh, I really quick, I wanted you to talk a bit about the sewage lifts. I think that one of how many homes are there? About 65 homes there that are threatened.
Yeah.
So the housing, the White Swan housing has about 65 homes. This is in a place where the tribe had done an employment study last year. And what they found, they did the surveys, and they found out that over half the tribe was didn't have housing. So you're talking about losing 65 homes in a reservation in a county where there is very little housing. you know. And when I spoke to the tribal treasurer, he told me that that they have about 40 homes that they're rehabbing. These are former meth homes, and the meth issue is another issue that I can't talk about in detail here right now. But so they have about 20 of them ready to move people to. But Wagner is a different community than Lake Andes, and the people there really want to stay in their, they want their, they love their community. They want to keep it. They have, you know, they want to remain a community. They don't want to be dispersed. And so the sewage lifts are presently sandbagged and surrounded by water. And if they go, you know, and they're being monitored fairly closely by tribal officials, but if they go, everyone there will have to be evacuated because sewage will back up. And even the new school in Lake Andes, there's a sewage lift there as well that is also sandbagged and threatened. And so in the new school they just built, the sewage is backing up there as well. And there's discussion to move the kids back to the old school. I think the one where my dad went to school. You know, they're really under threat. How are the lifts doing there, the sewage lifts?
What are sewage lifts?
They basically pump.
Pumps, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're sewage. They keep the sewage out of the main water lines. The lift station here is presently operating on one pump at 50%. But the plus thing about it is they've drained all the water away from it because at almost all summer the lift station was underwater from, you know, the flooding. And now they've gotten these big pumps that are sucking the water out of it. And then, you know, like you said, to the other side of the field or the other side of the road in the field. And so that was the one good thing because like a few days ago, you know, some part of our buildings, we couldn't flush the toilet. So we were saying, okay, did you check on the pumps? And did you order if they do go out, is there backup pumps, you know? Because if it does go out, I'm pretty sure they said it was like a 30 minute window. They had to go and change those pumps, those motors, and then, you know, otherwise it would back up into everybody's home and the buildings that are here. And our gym, our White Sun Community Gym.
And that's such an important place right now for the community. And you know, the standing water has also impacted the phone lines. Like the phone, I talked to Grandma Teresa, and she was saying her phone doesn't work. So she was looking to get like a cell phone. And then I think there are burner phones on the Amazon wish list. And many of the community members are coming to, you know, like the tarot office and using the phones there. But sometimes those are out as well. And electricity goes out. And the issue is if they need to evacuate, if there's another storm or another flood in the middle of the night, how are they going to get out? And if it's snowing and that dirt road that has the crests at the very top of the hill that you can't see oncoming traffic, if they have to leave, then what's going to happen? And most of, like, you know, over 100, you know, most of the, you know, we're talking about hundreds of children and elders and adults.
Yes. And then at this point, I know that the tribal leadership, they have been meeting every day on their contingency plan that they, I know that they do have other community gyms that are okay, that are located in Wagner and Marty, that, you know, if needed to be like a makeshift shelter, it would be able to, they would be able to get, you know, people there until they figured, you know, what would be the permanent solution to them. But ultimately, I know that they said that these homes are going to be tore down and new homes are going to be built. And I know that other tribes, just recently I visit with the San Manuel tribe, and they have came down and they have taken pictures and they have visit with us what our needs were. The whole tribal leadership met here at the housing where it's flooded, and they had talked about, you know, possibly getting 20 homes built on our tribal land somewhere, and having the money to you know, do the infrastructure part of it, you know, like the septic and the, you know, the electricity hookup, the water hookup. So that was a plus, you know. But like I said, there's a lot more than just, you know, 20 homes.
And yeah, and we're talking about 65 homes, and there are more than one family living in these homes. Sometimes there's two to three family generations.
I just wanted to once again say that you're listening to Jacqueline Keeler, you just heard, who's the regular Wednesday, second Wednesday co-host, and Shelley Sansosi, the director of the Tribal Employment Rights Office and a leader in the White Swan community, which has been so heavily impacted by not just the so-called bomb cyclone, which dumped an enormous amount of rain and flooded that community back in March, but has had problems with just continued flooding and repeated large rain events. One thing, you know, I mentioned at the outset the comparison to, you know, New Orleans after Katrina, Houston after Harvey, and Puerto Rico after Maria. Obviously, one thing that you're mentioning is the community pulling together. Obviously, if the government is not willing or able to step in and give assistance, obviously communities, you're looking to fellow other tribal communities to help you out and just help yourselves out. I just wanted to mention that. One thing that I think before we go, one thing I'm really trying to figure out here, as I don't know this, I haven't really studied it, is it seems like it's, in terms of, are there real solutions to this? It seems like there's a problem of standing, continued standing water. You mentioned that they're not willing to open up an aqueduct which could drain. So talk about, is there a possibility that some of this water could be drained? I'm trying to figure out what's really going on with the, you know, is it just so much water has come in that it's not able to drain away?
It did get a figure of 2 to 3 years for the water to drain.
Wow.
And that would be with, you know, sunlight and such. And but yeah, the aqueduct was built in the 30s by the Conservation Corps. And that it has not been maintained. It's owned by the South Dakota Fish and Wildlife and Game Department, and but it's under a field that a farmer wants to turn into a feedlot, and he's battling with the town and everyone, and nobody wants the feedlot there, and so he's not allowing people to go on the land, and there it does appear that there's sunken holes in the field, one of the tribal officials showed me where in the map where the aqueduct goes through. It goes quite a distance, and then it empties quite a distance going towards the Missouri River. And so, from what I heard, people were saying that needs to be the size of a small river. Right now, it's a pretty good size culvert, you know, probably taller than over 6 feet tall, maybe taller. And so it's rushing water, but they say that it may be leaking because he may have crushed it with some of his equipment trying to turn it into a feedlot. So, but he won't let anybody to come look at it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
and he's a white farmer. And so he, this is where you get the conflict of interest. Some people have certain interests and other people have other interests, and not everyone's acting in the best interests of the community. Finding the funding and then also the jurisdictional issues. The tribe actually owns that land, don't they? Do they own his land? I think he's leasing it from the tribe. So the tribe can have the option not to renew his lease. The tribe...
They could pull the lease too at any time. It's just like you said, it's checkerboard. So most of the land that he is he has, he owns personally. So like you said, his interests are different. He has big RV parks there, and then there's a lot of real estate, vacation homes, because it's right on the Missouri River, and if that was to go there, it would probably potentially flood all of them homes there.
Yeah, where the aqueduct empties beyond that, going towards the Missouri, there's a fear that it would actually endanger the second homes, which are vacation homes. And so instead, this community, the White Swan Housing Community, is being sacrificed to protect those vacation homes.
Well, listen up. We are rapidly coming to a close. We got to wrap it up here. I want to thank you so much, Shelley. This has probably been an opportunity for you to vent a little bit. It doesn't seem like you've gotten a whole lot of the world's or the country's or the state's attention on this really terrible situation you're facing.
Yes. And I appreciate the opportunity. I want to thank you and Jacqueline for calling and inviting me, you know. And I want to say thank you for all the help that's been giving to our community, and for you guys putting our wish list on your website and getting it out there to the people. And I want to say thank you so much on behalf of the children and the elders. Those are my main priority.
Thank you, Shelley, for all you do. I mean, I was there and I saw that Shelley and her volunteers, they're there from 7 a.m. in the morning until late at night, keeping that community center going and a place where the community can come and get coffee, can the children come and play in a clean environment. And just, I don't know what that community would be without the work you're doing and everyone pulling together the way they are.
Okay. Well, thank you both on behalf of myself and KBOO. This has been an incredible, intimate glimpse into, again, behind the front lines of climate disruption. Don't get a chance to hear these stories too often. So thank you both. And that's it for us. That's Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hold your head up, lift the top in.